Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Parker said, sometimes with the British film industry, it's hard to know if we're waving or drowning. Let's find out.
Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guests are all the way from Germany, Michael Venus and Thomas Friedrich. Hello.
Hi, Stuart. Thank you for having us.
Yes. It's my pleasure, my pleasure. Now, for the benefit of the listener, do you want to sort of single out yourself, because obviously we're only hearing voices, and tell us what your role is on the film Sleep?
Yeah, I'm Thomas Friedrich, and I'm from Berlin, Germany, and I am a screenwriter, and I wrote the screenplay with Michael for the horror movie Schlaf. Yeah, basically that's me.
Okay.
So, and I'm Michael or Michael Venus, and I'm the director of that movie, and was a co-writer to Thomas too. So cool. That's my role. Yeah.
Well, thanks for using you guys. So, first and foremost, so the film is called Schlaf. Is that right? And does that literally translate as sleep?
Yes. Yes, you can.
Yes,
say
it does. Yeah.
Does one of you want to give the listener a brief sort of synopsis to what Schlaf's about?
So basically, it's a story about a mother-daughter relationship, and the mother is haunted by nightmares and by the belief that they are real. So she goes on a journey to find out, but the journey stops very abruptly. And she's hospitalized. And now it's on her daughter to kind of get behind this secret, what happened to her mother. So she goes down to this spiral that's the history of her family in a way. And so I don't want to spoil too much.
No. And I think I'm just to let the listener know, I've not seen the film yet, because the film is about to get its world premiere at Berlinale 2020. So do you want to tell people, for those listening that may be going or thinking of going to Berlinale this year, how can they see Schlaf and when?
Yeah, you can see it. We have a world premiere on the 25th of February at the Kino International. That's a fantastic, beautiful cinema theater built in East German, in East Berlin, where, I don't know, films like Dirty Dancing had their European premiere and so on. And it's one of the most beautiful theaters I know. And it's in the middle of Berlin. And it has 550 places.
Wow.
Like that, and it would be. So I'm really looking forward for that, and it's well, our film is entitled Sleep, and it's about dreams, and that premiere is a dream to us.
Yeah, it's very exciting to be shown in that cinema.
And after that, there are four screenings around day after day in that week, Berlinale week, and the rest of the Berlinale, and on other theaters which are great too. Other great houses.
To give us an idea of how Berlin Alley might work, and obviously you being German filmmakers, getting your world premiere at the most prestigious festival in Germany, and certainly one of the most prestigious festivals in Europe. How is news of your world premiere sort of reported on? Is there going to be like national news for yourself and stuff like that to do with world premiere at a festival, or will it be very much a film news thing?
So the engine started last week, and we can feel that there are papers and networks, television networks and radio networks that are asking for interviews to us. But you are our first interview, our first interviewer. So it's a defloration of that. It's our defloration of giving interviews. And thanks for that.
Actually,
and we are shy and nervous. So be
yeah.
Nice to us.
Yeah, and actually, there's a funny. It just reminded me that Micha and I, we met,
yes,
kinda exactly 20 years ago.
Oh yeah.
And I had a radio show. I was doing a radio show in the university radio, and I asked Micha if I can broadcast his radio play, and for that reason, he came into the studio and I interviewed him, and it. I just pretend because it's such a nice story, and that it's kind of exactly 20 years ago. Yes. And now this is our basically second but first interview like that.
Well, that's nice. I feel quite privileged. I feel quite privileged. So thank you guys for letting me join in. And can I pass on congratulations from Britflix as well for getting selected? I mean, that's no mean feat. For any film to get themselves selected at Berlinale. So let's start at the beginning then, in terms of Schlaf as an idea that became the film that people are going to see next month. What would you say was the kernel of that idea, the start of it that began the momentum that led to what people are going to see at Berlinale?
There were two things. First thing was our producer Verena. She watched, I don't know, I guess it was, I don't know, some neo-noir Nordic horror film in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And that was so fresh and so new to her, and in the same way so familiar to German issues, like, I don't know, dark things in the woods and so on, that she said, guys, don't you want to make a horror film? And that question was in that time very exotic because it doesn't exist in Germany at that time. And in the same time, Thomas and I, we were working on ideas about the Thomas, help me. Patriarchat. What is it in English?
I think it's kind of the same, isn't it? Patriarch.
Oh, patriarch.
Society.
Yeah.
Yeah, patriarch.
Yeah. And that was an issue, daddy issues, and so on, and cultural issues, and that what was we wanted to write about. Wanted to write a script about it, making out a movie of it. And Verena came with that horror thing, and we said, well, that issue fits perfectly to horror, and horror is the horror is film genre is the perfect mirror to bring some of that topics and issues quite on the point to directly, more bodily, more physically, and so that was the start. Verena asked, and
So that was the process, but then, so this specific idea, where is this born out of then? If that's like you two working on a horror film, this specific idea, then where does this start?
I think we were kind of playing around with the idea of doing a horror movie in the time, and then with Verena asking, and it was we were a lot of talking about horror tropes and. the nice dichotomy in horror movies that you have rules, but also you have to break the rules to make a good horror movie. We were talking a lot about that stuff, and then I wanted to do, for me it was clear that if I want to do a horror movie, I don't want to do something like a really horror movie. So we thought about kind of pagan beliefs and old mysteries that are before Christianity kind of changed everything. And we were searching for a nice demon we haven't seen in that form. And I always wanted to do something about nightmares. So we came to this old story or belief that there is a dark elf, like a demon that kind of makes you dream. I think nightmare is the mare. I think it's the same, isn't it? The mare, is it the name of the demon in, yeah. And I think it's the same German word, Ma, or so Ma is in the north, and in the south you say Alp. So it's the demon that comes at night and it suffocates you. So that's why you have those bad dreams. So this was the old belief where nightmares come from. And so we had this idea of spreading nightmare that haunts people. So this was kind of a starting point. And then it was, we added a village, and of course, and then we were playing around, but the process over the years, the story changed so much. It was a real journey to the story is now.
So what's your process then? Because obviously two people can't type at a computer together. So, and obviously scripts don't usually start with, you know, typing, fade in and off you go. So what's the collaboration between the pair of you as co-writers of this script?
I think we have the ratio kind of shifted during the process. So at the beginning I was, we had talks and we had a lot of discussions, and then I kind of wrote down some ideas and we discussed them and I reworked them. And so it was sometimes stretches where I worked on it and then we came together and discussed it, and or Micha contributed another part, and then so the ratio was more like that. And as closer we got to the final production, it Micha went more from the co-writer to the director gear. So it shifted more and more and more. I was more the facilitator to make the script shootable in a way.
Got you.
So this is, and then we had stretches where we just met for 2 weeks in, at Micha's place and, drank a lot of coffee and sat together, discussed, and I was typing because I'm a faster typer. And, And it's a really natural process in a way.
So you were drawing on a real sort of folkloric legend to give us the sort of antagonist force in this horror film. Is that right, or have you invented something yourself?
No, the thing is that all those pagan beliefs, is that the right word?
Yeah.
So all those pagan beliefs, they are with Christianity, it's a lot of it became pretty unclear what the real belief was. So because you can't really tell which is all where Christianity already plays a part in kind of shaping the story, and this belief with the Alp is so different. It's pretty fluid, so we could take this figure and apply our own rules.
That's kind of what I was getting at,
more a starting point.
So how did you take that idea of something that people might understand as it is and then turn it into your dramatic fiction and horror?
Actually, a lot of people don't know this story about the Alp.
Okay.
So it's kind of a clean slate. So we were really free. So actually, I think some years ago there was another German horror movie, and I think the title was Nachtmama. What could be the same demon, but it's totally different. So it's really, it's like you just feed off certain sources, and you're pretty free to go.
And what do you remember being the sort of main storytelling challenges for you once you started to sort of establish a kind of a beginning, middle, and end? What were the challenges of sort of dealing with that demon, the daughter's search for answers, the mother comatosed, the threat of the evil and everything? What for you were the storytelling challenges, pulling that, making sure that knitted together?
I guess we had to end very, very early, mm-hmm. early, and it was like an aim where the rest of the story and the characters has to move on. Or do I remember right, Thomas?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
But funny, it was a clear picture we had where we want to go.
Yeah.
But there was still enough freedom to let the story kind of develop itself in a way.
And then in our like collage kind of writing process, I don't know, sometimes it was like a cut-up technique. So we found out that a lot of unconscious processes were the right way. So elements came into the story that came out of our Unterbewusstsein, of our unconscious storytelling, that was magic and weird. So for a screenplay, it's always kind of artificial thing to give your characters names. Names always sound a bit artificial. And then and we didn't talk about a lot about the names. And after a while, we realized that the names are connected to that Alp myth. So we have our main character is Monad from Demon. We have her mother has the name Marlene, which is kind of nightmare, comes from that.
Hmm.
And we have a demon woman, a ghost kind of demon. And she has a name too, and it's Waltrud, comes from Trud. And Thomas, you can explain what a Trud is.
So. Yeah, a Trud is basically when in the south you say Alp, in the north you say Ma, and in Trud is the places you left. So it's basically we have three different names for the same demon, because different dialects take difference. And Trud, die Trude, is also a name for Alp. And also what I like is that that the German word Wald is also kind of snuck into that name. So because we said we had this end point, we wanted to go, and in between were kind of like we had a couple of scenes that we really liked and that we kind of that also called for us were important in the story. Funny enough, most of them were cut out at the end. But so we had always this weird feeling that there is a meta structure there with all those different sources we kind of took our ideas or what we had, if it's a mythical thing or like a
detective story.
Citat. Yeah, or like aspects out of a thriller, and it was always like finding another way through this matrix to get to this end point. So and then there were this kind of coincidences, Micha said, where we kind of found where we had a structural problem, and it felt really like a real problem. And then we kind of took two scenes out and exchanged the kind of put another scene before, and suddenly it worked. So it was always like, and that gave us a good feeling with the script, because we always found the solution in the script.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's always nicest, isn't it? That the answer is staring in your face. You've just got to see it.
I agree. Yeah, I think for me this is a way to kind of find if your story has the potential. If you find these answers in the story, this is a good sign that this is a story.
Without a doubt, yeah. Because I think sometimes when you have an idea, you haven't got a story. It might be a good idea, but that's not a story, is it?
Yeah.
When the script was ready to go and you were planning to shoot the movie, without giving too much, hopefully we don't have to give too much away, but you've already mentioned the idea that some scenes in the final cut didn't make it and the like. So was the stuff on the page that, you know, we work with finite resources and finite money and finite people. So even though you would have written for your budget, was there still sort of evident challenges of how we're going to achieve this with what we've got on the page and what we want to put on screen? Can you think of examples that you were sort of having to really sort of focus on to make sure you pulled off what you thought was important but wasn't going to be easy?
Thomas and I, and our director of photography, our DOP, Marius, when we had found after a year our perfect location in the German heartland, in the woods, a huge clinic, which we changed into a an empty, lost place hotel. So when we were there the first time, Thomas, you remember well, half of the script was a quarter of the script was rewritten for that place. The place told us the story in a different way.
Oh, really?
Which we couldn't imagine on our desks, and that on the spine of our plots and storylines and the behavior of our characters, we found in new stages and rooms that had their own voice, and that changed a lot. Do you remember, Thomas?
Yeah, it was funny because it was kind of special and frightening the same moment, because we were searching so long. The village and the place and the script was also, it was like meta. We didn't know where we're going to shoot, so we didn't go into too much details in certain aspects of how the character is turning and where is what and something. And then when we found this place, we found some stuff there. We thought, okay, this has to be in the movie, and this doesn't work anymore. And I was walking through this hospital and thought, oh man, oh God, we have to change so much. But then half an hour later in the car, it was just like, okay, it's like this. First this happens, then this, then this, then this. And it worked. So it was, it opened up so many possibilities and a totally new dynamic that wasn't in the book before.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Mikhail, when you were discussing with your DOP the sort of look and feel for Schlaf, where did the conversation go there? What were the filmic references? What were the visual references that you were discussing with each other for the film you were hoping to shoot?
Marius is a DOP. He is very patient before he decides how to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
She really waits, and I'm a very nervous person, you know. Thomas, you have to laugh at that point. Because he... and come on, that start references, watch references and movies. How can we do it? Like this, or like that. Look at that, how Kubrick made it, and so on. And but he says just, okay, well, let's wait. And so he really waited to see the location and to read the shooting draft before he decided the technique and the language of the pictures. So that's the thing. And then he but it's not like, oh, let's do it in that style. It's like, what does the scene needs? Do we have a hand camera? Because so we always tried to step on the stages. When you say a scene is a stage, when you step into that rooms and with all the psychology and all the atmosphere from the script, then you can say, okay, what's the right technique, the right mechanic to get close to what the character is driven by, what the character feels. So that was the plan, and then shooting began, and the plan was, I don't know. It was good to have had a plan, but with that small budget we had, we always had to react on, I don't know, everything, weather, money, and circumstances. That always happened in filmmaking, and that had a lot of influence of how it looks. It was just the limitations, but there also were very a lot of presence on that way, a lot of gifts into that limitation. So we had, for instance, a dream sequence which was super complex technically and. The number of shots, and but it was a shot outside. It was a scene outside, and we had a special equipment built only for that scene. It cost thousands of euros. It was a little drone, but without a camera, but instead of a camera, there were lightning, very intense lightning. So we had the possibility to let a light fly around over some trees and so on. But it wouldn't fly in when it's raining or snowing. And it was May and it snowed.
Dear me.
It's just one night of snow. Night of snow, yeah.
In spring. And it was the only time my assistant cried because it was so it's such a precious, expensive scene, and we all were looking forward to realize that. And then everything was, I don't know, a half an hour before the end of the shooting day, the snow stops, and we shot everything we wanted to do in a couple of, or I think 4 or 5 hours. We shot it in 20 minutes, but we have.
It looks great.
It looks great. We have the snow in the picture. It looks like, I don't know.
Much more dreamy.
Much more dreamy, but it looks crazy, like a Polish auteur who masturbates on crazy pictures. He came out from his genius mind, and the limitation of the shots made it much more clearer. So we had to redirect everything, and that makes it much more clearer and more beautiful. And that was a gift. We didn't need to get. We thought it would be. We lose that scene, but we got a greater scene because of the limitations, and that was very interesting. Interesting.
The team was phenomenal. The team. Yeah.
When you were in the edit, what was revealed in the edit that wasn't evident when you were writing and producing the film?
the editing process. I had the most brilliant editor I've ever met. It was Silke. After the first cut, before the end of the first cut, I didn't knew, is it going to work? Did we shot enough? Did we shoot enough? Is it crazy structure which that film has? It has a lot of layers and elliptic tall scenes shot on four different days and so on. Does it work? Does it have a rhythm? Does it flowing and so on? It worked, and but it was quite too long. The first cut was too long. It was I guess 2.5 hours.
Ooh.
It was interesting because to watch the whole cut, it's rare to watch a whole cut during the editing process. You work from day to day, from scene to scene, and when you watch the scenes isolated, it might be great, a working scene. But when you see it at the whole film, the whole cut, you can see, okay, no, it's it's taking the drive out of the whole story. It moves you away from our main character and so on. It's too many ornaments and too many time watching people stepping and into a room and leaving it. So we really took everything out in the second cut, which doesn't move the story forward, and edited every scene as tight as possible, and made the opposite of Let It Flow, which we made in the first cut. And that was then the second cut was too tight, but we noticed very, very clear, okay, it's good that this is so tight because another thing has room to breathe.
I was going to say, that sounds like, sounds like you could get, you kind of go at the one end, you go, God, this is loose. And then you bring it so tight, you go, right, we need time to breathe then.
Yes. That's what we've done, yeah. And then so a third cut came out, and that was it.
If I was to put Schloff on the shelf at the video store, what films would I be putting it alongside?
Alongside. You can put Suspiria at the one side or Get Out at the other side. But you can also put a film like Raw, like a coming-of-age story with horror elements, put on the other side. And it's a crossover from drama, psycho thriller, and so on. And our producer calls it elevated horror.
So it's that idea of sort of, you're not stacking up bodies to kill, are you, basically? And you're not gonna obliterate us with gore. This is a thoughtful film where the horror and the dread is about what we feel about the characters we're watching.
Yeah, it's definitely more psychological.
Yeah.
So we were talking about this before we started recording. So as a closing question, I'll do a kind of the broader one. So only because you were saying that you'd had this conversation. So I'll be vague and say, what is horror, and let you fill the silence as to where that question takes you.
Yeah, what is horror? Let us show on Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a lot of people have seen that film.
Yes,
of your listeners, yeah. And I love that film because he put something new into the genre, and that is in the genre, and that is the reality. So we have that character who survives the zombie apocalypse, only to get killed by a white racistic bunch of cold-blooded assholes in the next second. So the last minute of that film is quite a documentary.
Mm.
So it's a collage, a montage of photographs. What happens with the body of our hero, and tells the at the end there's the question: which horror is more drastic? Is it reality with white racist assholes, or is it a zombie apocalypse?
Mm.
And that was very impressive to me to get that. And a film like Get Out or a film like Raw from France combines reality and real problems, real issues and finds an expression in a horror film, which brings us to the reality, to the real feeling of something that surrounds us now in real. And so what is horror? I think horror is always horror films, in my opinion, are films of confrontation, not of escapism. And so everything which confronts you with your inner fears, inner darkness, or with the darkness in political systems or in something like that is good stuff for a horror film, and that's something what you can call horror. Thomas, what's your definition?
I would say for me, horror is kind of a thriller that turns against you as you see the movie. So you are part of it. Whereas the thriller, you have a certain distance while you watch it, because it can be frightening and the suspense can be mind-boggling, but there is a distance. And I think what horror does, it as a viewer, I'm part of it. The integrity of my body, I feel that this threat or that this story is. It cuts deeper. So because this re-feeling of fear, this kind of laboratory you go into and to visit those deep fears you have, these that are everywhere in a way. And so for me, horror is always about also the integrity of your body, your psyche, and this. And it's a very physical genre, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think this because we had this term elevated horror. It's a term for people who don't realize that it is already an elevated genre.
It's funny. I think it's funny how I think what happens is there's this kind of mirror that society holds up and goes, that's what horror is. Until you tell me differently.
Yeah.
And it's like, so like you mentioned Get Out. Get Out comes along and we go, oh, right, I see what you've done there. You've used race and stuff. And then, like, as you said, that idea of taking social issues and making us aware of how bad the world is through presenting us with a kind of horror equation was what Night of the Living Dead was about. And you could argue even Rosemary's Baby is about the idea of society.
And the Krakow Ghetto. I think you can't read Rosemary's Baby as a film correctly if you don't have in mind that the director was a child in the Krakow, not Warsaw, in the Krakow Ghetto, hidden by people, hearing afraid by life to get out of a room. And if you don't know that, you miss a lot of the issues in the film.
Yeah, and even more so with something like The Tenant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so physical and confrontational. It confronts you in such a direct and visceral way sometimes that I think the rejection against the genre is just sometimes this overwhelming, this being overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
So I think it's a defense mechanism.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think sometimes it feels like the minute I'm aware I'm watching a horror film, then the almost like the film's losing. You know, it's like it's sort of, because if I'm thinking I'm watching a horror film, I'm thinking in terms of rules of the game and things like that. Whereas if a film's just making me unsettled and filling me with dread, and I don't know why, and I can't understand what I'm meant to do and what where, and I can't see a direction of travel, that's when horror begins to become an interaction between you and the film. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen Babak Kanvari's Under the Shadow.
I heard something about it, and some people taught me you have to watch it.
I mean, there's a moment in that's very similar, that uses the similar kind of decoder that you talk about in Night of the Living Dead, where the mm-hmm. film set during the early 80s, during the Iran-Iraq War, during the rise of the theology, you know, the theological the theologians' revolution, where they got rid of sort of, you know, liberal society, and you've got the central character being haunted by, again, a supernatural force, and she has to get out of her house, but she's now living in a country where women can't move around on their own. Uh-huh. So there's this amazing moment where the ghost gets her out of the house, and then on the street she's facing some guy who represents security forces, and it's like she's in as much trouble for being on the street, and it's like, what's the bigger threat? The demon in the house, or the people that surround her.
Yeah, most people in zombie movies are kind of killed by other people.
I would like you to remind people then, when and where can people see Schloff at Berlinale this year?
The world premiere is on the 25th of February in the Kino International.
Fantastic. I'll put a link in the show notes. And it just gives me to say thank you very much for giving us your time on the Britflix podcast.
Yeah, thank you, and sorry for my broken English, because I'm working hard on my Werner Herzog impression, but I'm not finished with that yet. So sorry. But Thomas, your English is just better, and I have always to warm up a little, and so I'm sorry when I sound like crazy.
You really don't have to be, because if we tried to do this in German, we'd never have a podcast. So trust me, I'm very grateful for your. For you, both your ability to speak, to do it in English with me. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. So bye. Have a good night. Sleep tight.
Alan Parker said, sometimes with the British film industry, it's hard to know if we're waving or drowning.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.